Begin, and those who are not, we're going to begin. Those who are staying, also, if you could just move up, just so I don't have to scream louder than hopefully I should. Welcome back. We didn't do too much PR today, but we are back now officially for our fourth year, Kanai Nahara, in this series. We want to thank the singers for sponsoring. And our schedule, I guess, check the emails, but on a week-to-week basis, we'll do as much as we can before Yontif, but obviously there'll be some break coming up, and then, of course, we'll pick up again with Parshas Noach after Yontif, since Bereishis won't work. It's a three-day Yontif. Anyway, that's our game plan as we begin to get into the fall, and we conclude the Devarim and get in Mr. Hashem to beginning again of the Torah in Bereishis. Towards the end, middle, I should say, of Parshas Kisavo, in the Perek of Zion, the Torah describes the very famous kind of new bris, if you will, that the Jewish people make with the brachos and the klolos on Har Grizim and on Har Eval. And the Torah tells us here on Revi, in the beginning of Perek of Zion, Hashem commands Moshe to bring everyone together, and they're going to cross the Yarden. And then Hashem is going to give them these big avonim gedolos, and you're going to plaster them first, and then kasaf aleim as kol derei Torah hazos, right? You're going to then have this recommitment to the Torah and to the values of the Torah. And there's a whole processional and process with the mizbeach and etc. All of it is described here in the first 8 psukim here of Perek Chav Zayin. All in anticipation of the brachos and the klolos, Har Grizim and Har Eval. So the Rambam, and again, here's a number of commandments, including the specific commandment of preparing these stones that Moshe and his generation got. The Rambam in the Shroshim to the Sefer HaMitzvos in Shoresh Gimel, in the third of his principles, as you know, the Rambam not only did he count, in his opinion, and categorize the 613 mitzvos, but he also told you, because we all know some very complicated lines to be drawn, so he gives us his rules for how he came to his determination. That's what's known as his shroshim. And there are some very famous debates in that, which we'll see in a moment. So in the shroshim, one of the most famous rules that the Rambam postulates, which contrasts him with some other of the authorities, is that the Rambam writes that even something that was an absolute clear biblical obligation at some point, if it is not an eternally binding mitzvah, if it's not a mitzvah that will be forever, so then he is not going to count it in the 613 mitzvahs. Doesn't mean it wasn't a mitzvah, doesn't mean that, but if it was a specific moment in time, so then the Rambam is not going to count it. And that is why, for example, the Rambam says we do not count this mitzvah of the hakama of these avonim, of writing the Torah on the avonim, we don't count that as a mitzvah. Or furthermore, another example, there were all sorts of chiyuvim that the people had at the time of Matan Torah, how they had to prepare the mountains, they had to step around the mountain. So those aren't part of the 613 mitzvahs, because they have no relevance to anyone other than in that moment. They have no relevance for generations. That is the sheet of the Rambam, and it certainly seems very, very intuitive. However, there is a contrasting opinion, and that is of the Bahag. There are examples where the Bahag does count mitzvahs. He also counts mitzvahs that seem to be the Rabbanon. That's one famous controversy with the Bahag. But another one is that he even counts mitzvahs which seem to have had only very unique and limited relevance. And the Ramban, who not only did he have a commentary on the Rambam in the 613 mitzvahs that are counted, but also has commentary on this opening section of the Shoreshim. So the Ramban endeavors to try to defend and explain the Shita of the Bahag. And he suggests that the reason why, for example, when it came to Matan Torah, so there, those mitzvahs had no enduring effect. You had to prepare the mountain, you had to do this, you had to do that. So those were really very limited, not only in the time, but there was no impact felt beyond that. However, says the Ramban, when it comes to these stones and these mitzvahs that surround this standing here at Har Grizim and Har Eval, says that this is still going to be counted. Why? Because the brachos, or God forbid, the klolos, are eternally relevant. In other words, the actual specific action, so that was one time, true. But if you have an action which has eternal relevance, even though the action is limited, the mitzvah will still be counted, at least according to the Bahag. That's like, if you will, a second shita. Rav Sadia Gaon, as you know, Rav Sadia Gaon is also one of the famous Moni HaMitzvos, but famous both for his terseness and because of the fact that it got more recently, in the 20th century, opened up. And as Rav Sadia Gaon wrote, lists the 30 mitzvahs in a poem. I mean, nothing. Each mitzvah maybe has a word that refers to it. So most of us would have no clue what he was talking about. But Rav Yerucham von Shapurlau, earlier part of the 20th century, so he endeavored to write a whole book uncovering the different opinions of Rav Sadia Gaon. And once he was on the topic, so then he discussed everything else that was also relevant to the discussion from all the other commentaries of the Mefarshim. One of the important things to know about Rav Sadia Gaon is that he has three categories of mitzvos, not two. He has mitzvos asei, that's obvious. He has mitzvos los asei, also obvious. And he has mitzvos hamutalos al tzibur. Mitzvos which are uniquely on the tzibur, he counts as a third category. And Rav Sadia Gaon, as Rav Perlow understands him, he also counts this mitzvah of hakamas, the bris of the brachos and the klalos. He counts this as a mitzvah number one, like the Bahag. But what's unique about Rav Sadia Gaon is that he, or what's curious, is not only that he did that, but he lists it among the mitzvahs which are a chiyuv on the tzibur. Now, what is he getting at by this? So, Yerucham von Shapurlau explains that he's hinting at the following. He's referencing the fact that, as the Gemara in Maseches Sota seems to imply, that there is, in these brachos and klalos, a sense of collective responsibility. That the essence of the brachos of Har Grizim and Har Evol are not so much on every individual, but on the nation as a whole. That we either sink or swim together. In other words, says Rav Yerucham von Shapurlau, what Rav Sadia Gaon has in mind is what's being enunciated here is the notion in the terminology, we're more familiar with it, of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh. This idea that each Jew is responsible for each other, and therefore we will all sink or swim based on not how we ourselves do, but alone, but also really on how the tzibur does. And therefore this mitzvah, true, the actual mice of etching it out on the stones only took place in Har Grizim and Har Evel, but that was not just a bracha or klolos which have relevance eternally, which was the Ramban's theory for the Bahag, but here you have something much more concrete. There are actual, tangible chiyuvim, in a sense, we'll have to see what those are, how they play out now, but that are relevant ledoros, the whole reality of Arvus, he suggests, the Rav Sadia Gaon sees as included in these brachos and klolos of Har Grizim and Har Evel, this idea of the collective responsibility. And therefore, that, says Rav Perlow, is why not only did he count them, but he specifically counted them when they by putting them into this third category of mitzvah samotal salat tzibur. Now, what I'd like to do now is to ask you a question, which is more of a theoretical, analytical question, a chakira. And then I'd like to spend most of the rest of the time focusing on a very specific halachic issue, a prat in the idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, and I hope at the end to show how that, as well as this discussion that we saw of the mitzvos, may very well be dependent on this chakira. The question I want to ask is the following, and it's very much connected to, if you will, a cousin of Arevus, and in fact, it may actually be a cousin. It may be almost a father-son relationship. If you forgive my metaphors. But if we were doing the topic, I'd discuss it more then. But it may be very related, depending on the question is how close, to Lifnei Iver. The idea of that is not just that I can't do Averus, so that I can't play a very vital role in other people's Averus. That's just a very basic definition of Lifnei Iver. What? So far, so far, I just mentioned that we have in the Parsha, Hashem tells the Moshe, the command of the Jewish people, that when you cross the Yarden, you're going to go on Har Grizim and Har Evel, and you're going to write the way the Torah uses the terminology, Torah, you're going to write the Torah, quote unquote, whatever that means, on these big stones. And then there's going to be a whole process where Hashem is going to give brachos on one mountain. Amen. Close, right? So far we're good? That's just the part, that's just the chumash. Okay, so the question is, those specifics that the Jewish people have to do, for example, writing the things on the stones, making a carbon, etc., at that moment, are those things which the Jewish people were commanded to do, it's in our parsha, are those things that should be counted in the minyan taryag? What would you think? Oh, good. So you're both wrestling with the issue. So the Rambam does not count them for obvious or very likely reason, because it's only relevant one time in history. Shine. Now it's chumash for us to learn. It's still Torah. And chumash, even better than history. Chumash. It's in the chumash, right? However, what's striking, and maybe this is where you got lost, but only because you're surprised, but it's worth hagufa because you're surprised, therefore you have to think about it more. There are at least two of the Moni HaMitzvos who count it. The Bahag counts it? Yes! Oh, that's the question. Good! So that got a halakha in the Hanami. I'm not saying it's easy to understand. In the Hanami. But that Hagufa, that's what we have to work to understand. The Bahag counts it and Rabsajagon counts it. So the Bahag counts it without any explanation. So I just mentioned that the Ramban suggests that in the Hanami there's no Maisa HaMitzvah that's irrelevant. But in terms of counting it, it does have relevance. Why relevance? Because the idea that if you'll do Hashem's Torah, you're going to get blessed, and if not, you're going to get cursed. That was true then, and it's still true. So the notion of the brachos, but Ein Hanami does nothing l'mayim. Faith. Yes, the answer he said is yes, but I don't want to get sidetracked on a philosophical machlokas, because I'm just mentioning. That's the Ramban's theory behind the Bahag. Huh? Yeah. You think why dafka these as opposed to any other? Oh, okay, okay. Right. Okay. So what you can ask is, so then we have other psukim in the Torah that talk about doing Hashem's things. So how come those aren't counted and this is counted? Because those are just statements of reality. Here there was a specific action. Okay. Anyway, here's the key though, Joe. The key which I mentioned now, which I hope to get back to, is that Rav Sajigon, not only did he count it, but he specifically counts it in his group of mitzvot, which he says are mutalas al hatzibur. The question is, what does that mean? So that we haven't answered. Now I want to ask a question about Arvus. Rav Sajigon has this theory. And Rav Perlau, who I believe is the great-grandfather of the current Rav Perlau, I think it's the same Shpacha. So Rav Perlau, Rav Chaim Perlau, who wrote this three-volume humongous beer, Rav Sajigon's very small cryptic poem. So he suggests that the reason that the mitzvot were counted by Rav Sajigon, his brachos were counted, etc., is because when you look at the brachos, they weren't just talking about, well, you'll Joey Pollock do mitzvot, if either of a God will do mitzvot or not. Rather, they were speaking to the tzibur as a nation. And we'll all be blessed if in sum total we're doing the right thing. We'll all be cursed, God forbid, if in sum total we're not. Now, why should I be punished, or for that matter, rewarded based on you're a good boy, and if you're a good boy, if you're a bad boy? The answer is, Arvus. There's a sense of collective responsibility. So even though, again, there's no Maisa HaMitzvah that lingers from this historical event, writing on the stones only happened once, that's true. But, says Rav Perlau, perhaps that's why Rav Sajigon counted it as a mitzvah, and Dafka counted it in the mitzvah of the Tzibor, because it speaks, it's mashma, of this notion of we have achrayas for other Jews. So I want to transition by asking a shaila about this notion of arvus. And I want to just point out, we sometimes get confused, but there really are two different, when we say arvus, we really sometimes mean two things, and they're really in a certain sense two flip sides of the same coin. One, which is what we'll be focusing on momentarily for the rest of the shiur, has to do with mitzvos. If I want to do a mitzvah, and you need to do a mitzvah, can I somehow do it for you or help you fulfill your mitzvah? Do we have that relationship that allows me to do that? Or are we spiritual strangers and I do my thing and you do your thing? That's one part of arvus. The other part, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin speaks of and really this story is talking about, has to do with punishment. Not so much mitzvahs, but averos. If I'll see my friend doing an avera, do I have a chiyuv to try to stop him, to talk to him? Or do I say, no, I don't care what he does, it's his business, I'm taking care of myself. Good! So tochacha, and that's where I was getting to, which is it's all part of that mishpacha of collective responsibility. There's tochacha, and there's also lifnei iver, right? I can't actively help, right? Like the guy asked for the chazer, I can't give it to him, right? Lifnei iver. So when it comes to lifnei iver, l'moshe ma'adav adoma, a classic question. I don't remember if we've discussed this in a shir, but it's not, Mr. Shem, one day we will. A classic chakira, which many of the great achronim ask and discuss when it comes to lifnei iver, is the way we put it in Yeshivish shorthand, is it a mitzvah klolis or a mitzvah pratis? Meaning, is there one overarching category called lifnei iver? And if I were violate it, so I'm always violating the lifnei iver, and it's the same aver lifnei iver, whether I help you eat treif, or I help you eat panyum kippur, and I help you do murder, it's all the generic mitzvah klolis called lifnei iver. However, that's the pashtus. But there's an intriguing possibility that there's another approach. That really, lifnei iver is a detail, it's a prat in each and every avera. That when the Torah says lo sirtzach, it doesn't just mean you shouldn't kill. Part of that avera is, and you shouldn't help anyone else kill. When the Torah says keep kosher, it doesn't just mean you have to keep kosher. It also means you can't help anyone else not keep kosher. Why would you say that? What are the nafkaminas? There are many nafkaminas. Big discussion. A big discussion. It's a class, exactly, that type of question. Whenever you have these generals, I speak sometimes in the shir, I've done this in the Shabbos Gemara shir, sometimes the way I frame it, that you have certain sugyas where you really have to think of it as like a grid. And you have two different lines that you're plotting on the grid. One is a general category, and one is a specific one. And the very same mitzvah, or halacha, one mitzvah may involve both. And you have to disentangle one from the other. So if you have a machlokas aposkim about hiddur mitzvah in bris milah, so really you have two things going on at the same time. You have hilchos bris milah and you have hilchos hiddur mitzvah. And one rishon or achron might say one thing, but they might agree about bris milah, but they're arguing about hiddur mitzvah. Or vice versa. You have to know in these type of general mitzvahs, whether they're about mitzvahs like hiddur mitzvah or averos like this neither, so you always have to analyze to what extent they have an independent identity and to what extent are they subcategories. Okay, let's not throw around too much technical, but that may be exactly it. But maybe, I don't want to get sidetracked.
What it dealt with in the Gemara, that certain mitzvahs and the veris, like even though it's a bad for the seabor, couldn't let the veris invest in some not being shoddy, right?
That's just an example, that's not the only one. So is that also, what about you and me? So you and me are not obligated? If it was biyadcha, okay, that might not be biyadcha, but if you see somebody eating treif, that might be biyadcha.
Okay?
Yeah, well, maybe. You better practice your aim. Okay. Okay.
Well, there's certain mitzvahs that the mitzvah is to do something, and then when the person who's trying to do that is not living up to that, then the chiyuv kicks over the basement.
That's very rare, though. It's rare. Well, bris milah is an example, yes, but that's rare. That's not common. Right, if I'm not shaking lulav, the bezin can't shake it for me.
Would that be
oh, good. So I don't know yet. So let me ask you the same question when it comes to arvus. Is arvus a chiyuv klali or is it a chiyuv prati? When I have an obligation or perhaps even an opportunity to help you fulfill a mitzvah, or arvus, perhaps an obligation or responsibility if you violate an avera, is that a general mitzvah category, or is that a specific detail? That's the same question. Again, I don't think it's semantics. It's very, very similar. I said it's very similar to the lifnei iver question, but perhaps it has different relevance. And one area where it for sure has different relevance is when we think about arvus from the perspective of mitzvos. Namely, the Gemara has a famous comment known as yotza motzi, right? And it's something that we all do all the time, right? I shouldn't say all of us. When I make Kiddush at home on Shabbos morning for my family, it's the first Kiddush I'm making. But there are many people who've already had one Kiddush, some people have had two Kiddushes, right? And then finally they get home and have lunch. So the question is, how are they able, if they've already fulfilled the mitzvah of Kiddush, how are they able to be motzi, b'nei beso, or let alone their wife? But I'll leave aside the wife for a second. Let's say they're having company. Right? Yotza motzi, that's the shalom. So the Gemara says yes. The Gemara has a chiddush that there is a concept of yatsa motzi. Rashi says why? Arvus. And there's a famous ritva, which is hashkafic as well as halachic, I think, where the Ritva seems to say something amazing, that really what Rashi, what the Gemara is getting at, is that until every Jew has fulfilled the mitzvah, felt in my kima mitzvah, there's something not 100% shalem in my personal fulfillment of the mitzvah, until every Jew in the world has also fulfilled their mitzvah. And therefore, as long as they haven't, even though the Gemara calls it yotzah, but I haven't been 100% yotzah, and therefore that's why I can be mitzvah. Oh, good! Good segue! That's exactly what I wanted to come to. Shabbos morning is a separate shayla. Good. Which one? What did I just... give me 1 second. What did I just... the Rashi, what did I do with it? It'll come to me. I wrote it down here somewhere and I don't see what I wrote it. It's a Gemara. I think it's Rashi Chavkes. I mean, how far do you push it? He's not discussing that. That's a separate shayla. That's a separate shayla. He's not being nichnas to that. Right? Yeah, he's not kidding. That's a good question in general. Different people have different talking about that. This person is not discussing that. He's not discussing that. Good. So how did that work? Good. That's also a good shayla. So we won't be able to discuss all the shaylas, but I do want to discuss one very famous one, probably the most famous one. And it goes to a Gemara Masechet Brachos and Daf Chaf Amud Beis. The Gemara Masechet Brachos is discussing women's obligation in benching. And as you may know, there's a famous machlokes whether women are obligated in benching midaraisa or midarabanan. Now why, right? I know people who can eat, you know, women who can eat just as well. You know, why would they be only chayiv midarabanan to thank Hashem? Right, because what's one of the brachos, right? Ala Oretz, Yal Hamozon, and also Bris, right? So therefore, since they're not, especially when it comes to the Eretz, if that's an integral part of the benching, the connection to the land, so if they're not part of, they're not going to give their own Yerusha, and therefore, perhaps they're chai. That's a suffix in the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to know, the same kind of kasha, if I would just ask that shayla to somebody, right, the average person, what would you say to me, Rabbi? What's the difference? The mayna afkamina, they got a bench. It's not, no one said the putter. Maybe the chaymin rabbana, maybe the chaymin raisa. So the Gemara says, the problem here, we don't have any svarim in this base matters. We're a wandering shear. No, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I would like to read the Gemara for you. But the Gemara Masechet the Brachos says it's okay. Lamai nafkamina, can she be mosi the man? If that's, I don't want to say if, because that's already part of the Rishonim discussion. The Gemara just says, Lamai nafkamina, to be mosi the people that she's eating with. And again, the assumption is someone who'd be obligated to meet Raisa. I'm okay. Thank you. So, Ad Kan the Gemara. So the Rosh has a very, very famous and much debated comment on this Gemara. The Rosh says, I don't understand. There's a Gemara further on in Masechet Brachos that also discusses benching. You know that really, v'achalta v'savata, in order to be a chayiv d'araisa, even for a man, you have to have a shear of sviya, you have to be satiated. So, I don't know about you, but a kezias isn't going to satiate me. Right? A man's appetite. Right? So, let's say someone only has a kezias of bread, and they don't have a kezias, and they're still hungry. So, the chiyuv is to bench me to Rabbanon. So, it's unclear perhaps, but the Rosh learns the Gemara that someone who's chayiv me to Rabbanon could be motzi someone who's chayiv midaraisa. That's how the Rosh learns the Gemara. So frek the Rosh, maishna, the guy who's only chayiv midarabanan to be motzi another man midarabanan. From this Gemara, that seems to say if a woman is only chayiv midarabanan, she could not be motzi the man midaraisa. That's the Rosh's question. Again, it's based on two things: his learning of our Gemara and his learning of the Gemara later on. But given those hanachos, that's the Rosh's kasha. And it leads him to the following amazing statement. I actually hear this. I have the Lashon of the Rosh here. 1 second. The Lashon of the Rosh is... I don't think I have it. Maybe I don't. The Rosh, the Lashon is as follows. He asks the kasha, and then he answers, Yesh lomar, the lo dami, the ish, a man, afal gav, shlo, achal, klum, Dinhu shiyiftu res achirim. Chaisal ravim zabazet. The Rabbanan Amr of Shlai Yavaruch HaBerachas Anenem Loyana. Vichaka sh'achol kezayez al vishlan eschayev el mirabbanan motiyas achirim sh'achlu kadeh sviya. Sh'arev hu ba'avuram. Alov hu la'atzi lamina avon. Lif Torah sam min ha-mitzvahs. The Rosh learns that when it comes to Berachas Anenem, I heard people talking about that a few minutes ago, so says the Rosh, really he thinks Mikra Adin, you should not need to have had any taste of the food. Kaisal ravim zabazet should mean I could say a parades and you could say, I mean, even though I'm not eating. Ikra hadin, says the Rosh. But, it's a pasnish, it doesn't look so good. So Chazal said, you know, it's not right to make a bracha unless you yourself had a little bit of the benefit, had some hana. And therefore, you wouldn't bench, for example, if you had eaten, even if you were doing it to be mostly someone who needed to bench. However, says the Rosh, that's only that side technicality. But fundamentally, I don't need to be obligated at all, let alone on the same level as you. And therefore, the fact that this guy's only obligated to Rabbanon is not going to hurt him. Because as long as he ate a little bit, he had benefits, and then he's allowed to make a bracha for somebody else. The fact is, he also has to make a bracha for himself in Rabbanon. But it doesn't in any way impact or limit his ability to make a bracha for you, Achad Min HaTorah. However, and here's the key money line, Aval Isha Eina Bechalal Ha'arvos Lekach Eina Motzia Elami Shechiyuvo Mit Derabbanon. Thank you. Says the Rosh. It seems. That's the Pashtus. Says the Rosh. It's clear from the Gemara that if the woman would be on the same level as the man, as a Chiyuv, she could be Motzi him. So, you have to read this part of it into the Rosh, but I think this is clear. If I am obligated the same way you are, not Yatsa Motzi, I haven't been Yatsa yet. We're both obligated. And I say and you listen. What's that called? Is that called Arvus? No, that's not Arvus. A woman could do that. No problems with the Rosh. What's that called? Shomea Ka'ona. Which may be a version of Shomea Ka'ona. And Shomea Ka'ona, forget all the razzle-dazzle and the lomdus, how it works. But Pashtus, what does that mean? You were Yotzei. You may have been Yotzei through me, but you were Yotzei. Not me being Yotzei. You were Yotzei. You're not piggybacking on me. Especially according to some who understand it, it's as if I was literally talking. But either way, so says the Rosh, that is fundamentally different than Arvus, Shomea Ka'ona. That, we don't need Arvus. I'm obligated, you're obligated, right? We're both obligated to create the Torah, or in the Megillah, etc., or in the Shofar. One person will do it, the other person listens. That's called Shomea Ka'ona. We don't need Arvus. We don't need the whole Har Grizim and Har Evil. We don't need any of that for it. However, says the Rosh, if there's an inequality, whether the man's already been Yotzei, his mitzvahs are already Yatsamotzi, or in this case, where Mitzila maybe, one's only Mita Rabbanan and one's Mita Raisa. So says the Rosh, in order to bridge that gap, inequality, that requires Arvus. And you see from the Gemara that if a woman would only be Chayavis Mita Rabbanan, she can't be Motzi a man. What does that tell you, says the Rosh? That a woman is not the Chlal Arvus. Why? He wasn't talking about. Who said he was talking about a woman? Yatsamotzi could be two men. Good question. Or what about in the other direction? The Gemara about benching was talking about a woman being mostly the man. What about the man being mostly the woman? The Rosh doesn't say. Give me an example. No, but there, even though you're not obligated, you're not obligated if you benched already, but I could bench for you because of Yatsa Motzi. Okay? Yes, exactly. Bar Chayuva is more of a concept, it's not practical, it's more conceptual. The way we usually use the term Bar Chayuva, it's in a certain sense, I'll call it Shaychus. I'm in the Parsha because I was obligated. That's what the Rosh seems to say. Now that Rosh, it's like, you know, wild if you really, but you could also like read over it and not really miss it or not make a big deal about it. Think, you know, it would have been a Rosh of Rosh. It became a number one bestseller Rosh. It's the kind of Rosh you just have to have like, you know, in the back pocket when you're in the Shmorg next time. You know, just dropped, you know, so what do you think about that Rosh of Rosh? Which Rosh of Rosh don't you know? Darvas Rosh. Oh, that Rosh. This is, you know, you have to have these handy things when you go through life. This is one of those, this Rosh. How did it become so famous? Because of the Note of Yehuda. The Note of Yehuda speaks about this in two places. As far as I know, none of them in the Note of Yehuda. The Note of Yehuda is Yecheskel Landau. But he wrote three famous svarim. Most famous was his Tshuvas, called Note of Yehuda. Hence, Hamachuna, Note of Yehuda. I told you the joke about Shabbos Goy. I mean, we have this thing in Judaism where we like to name people after their famous books. So there was a very, very famous professor. I'm not sure if he was from, I think it was definitely traditional, but a professor of rabbinics. And there was a time where he taught in Harvard, and J.J. Schachter was his student at the time. And his most famous book was known as the Shabbos Goy. It's a famous an academic book. It's all about halacha and tshuvas and stuff. People still study it in graduate school. The Shabbos Goy, it's called. All about that concept in halacha from an academic perspective. So he said that he was always wondering. He said even it became the world's famous book, but he had this tremendous lament because he knew if he didn't come up with something else equivalently good, he would be known the Dari Daris as the Shabbos Goy after the book. Even though he wrote 20 other books, but that became the best known of his books. He'd be known as the Shabbos Goy. So, you know, right, the Chofetz Chaim wrote the Mishnah Berurah. Understand, that sentence makes no sense. It's incoherent. But okay, that's how we talk. It's, you know, as you can tell an insider from an outsider, if they know what that means, they're an insider. But that's how we talk. So the Note of Yehuda is known as Note of Yehuda for his Tshuvas. However, he wrote two other books. One is the Tzlach, the Siyun LeNefesh Chaya. That's what he wrote on Gemara, some Masechlas, not all. And he also has comments on Shulchan Aruch, known as the Dagol Mirvava. So in the other two, Svarim, the Note of Yehuda writes a following Chiddush based on the Rosh. Again, it's most well known in this particular case from the Dagol Mirvava. And he's writing in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph, which is Hilchos Kiddush and Hilchos Shabbos. But he also writes about it in our Gemara in the Tzlach. And he actually says something slightly different than the Tzlach, but for the most part, it's the same presentation. Says the Note of Yehuda, we'll call him. You see from this, Papashtus, he just takes the Rosh at his word, basically. He made it famous because he gave enough Kamina Lamaisa. You take the Rosh at his word. Obviously, women are not Shayach to Arvus. It wasn't just a limited comment to benching, says the Note of Yehuda. And it wasn't just in the case of the Gemara where the woman was going to be motzi the man. It's fundamentally she's mufka from Arvus. It doesn't say why. This is you see from the Rosh. And therefore it's ultimately true in reverse. If she's mufka from Arvus, that means that she cannot be motzi a man. That was the Gemara already. But it also means that a man cannot be motzi her. So again, let's think about it as we said in Rosh. If they're both obligated equally, so then you don't need Arvus. A Shomayak Ona that a woman for sure has. But what if we have a situation where the man would have a lower level obligation than the woman? You would need Arvus to bridge the gap, and you don't have it. What's the case where that happens? We'll get to that. That's 25 hours later. Depending on how long davening is, 24 hours later on Friday night. Kiddush Friday night, says the famous Dagol Mirvava. We say Kiddush in shul. I don't mean the minhag that many shuls have to say to have a kiddush at the end and give the kiddush to the grape juice to the kid. In Shmoneh Esrei, we say the essence of kiddush. We're not bar prayer often, that's true. But we, in essence, are Mekadosh HaShabbos. We say the bracha, Mekadosh HaShabbos. And in fact, the Note of Yehuda assumes, as many do, but Pashtus, we are Yotzei, our Chiyuv, the Oraisa with kiddush. Why do we even have a Chiyuv, the Rabbanon left? Why don't we say we have nothing, only Petur? That the Rabbanon is because it says in the Gemara in 10th Parak Masech Lepsachim, Ein Kiddush Al V'Makom Suda. You need to also eat when you fulfill Kiddush. That is only the Rabbanon. So you haven't yet fulfilled that. So you have to make Kiddush at home and have a Suda. Good. That's a discussion. That's a very good point. It's a Machlokas Rishonim. But you're right. Most Rishonim hold. The Kiddush Daraisa is just Rambam and Chinuch and others is Zechariah B'dvarim. There's a Rashi in Nazir, although the Rashi in Nazir we presume is not Rashi, but pseudo Rashi. Rashi in Nazir seems to say that even the wine is Daraisa, and there's another drinking the wine is even Daraisa, and there's a middle Shita, I think it's a day in Tosfos, who holds that not drinking the wine, but holding the wine while you make the Kiddush, and it's like Hashiv, it's like a toast. Right? So that may be the Daraisa. But either both of those are combined, still minority opinions. You're right. The majority opinion is it's Zechariah B'dvarim, and therefore for sure you're Yotzei in that's Hagufa, that's why you're Yotzei Shmoneh Esrei. But what about the Darabanan? So what happens? You come home from shul. Friday night. So you think you're like a regular from Balabas, you're going to make Kiddush for your family. Well, we didn't steal it. You don't understand my Oshir, do you? Okay, well, I was on Friday night. Not, you're learning. You were listening and you remember. Two very big milas. Shpeach. So, says the Note of Yehuda, he doesn't understand it. How are you allowed to be motzi your wife? Now, what would one easy solution be? The easiest solution would be if... According to the Rush, according to Rush, there's no arvus. What's one solution? That's controversial. In the Upper West Side? This is Baltimore, we're Hamish! Kalila! Oh, Rafala, good Muncie boy, there you go. She's a Davin. If she'll Davin, she fulfilled the same derisa as the man, and then the blind of Olivia Chayyid Rabbanah. And if you look in some of the poskim, they seem to assume the women daven. It's a big discussion. If you want to do what's called halacha, this is mamish. Also, and a whole academic field, history of halacha, where you could learn history through sifrei halacha, tshuvas and svar. So you see certain svarim. I didn't chart it, but it would be fascinating to chart both the date, the chronology, and the geography of it. Clearly, there were some poskim who write assuming that women are davening, and there are other poskim who are writing assuming for sure they're not davening. So lamaisa. If anyone here, before we even get to anything, I'll try to do some more lamaisa at the end of the year. But if you forget, if you remember nothing else, and if someone is worried about the Rosh or even the Rav Yehuda, so for sure you have one solution: is your wife should daven. Good. Okay. That is true. That's yeah. Okay. Good. Oh, we'll get to it. Good. Yeah, there's other tricks. I want to discuss the more lamaisa issue though before we get to the practical tricks. Why doesn't because you need a barakah, you need equivalent barakah yuba, I think. Why doesn't Shomea Kaona work? Now the Rosh assume. The Rosh is clearly assuming. The Rosh was assuming. That's when he made that distinction between the two cases, the two benching cases, two men and then a woman and a man. The Rosh was assuming clearly that Shomeiach Ona needs equivalent chiyuv. That's what Rosh said. When it's two men who are fundamentally have the same chiyuv, then you could do Shomeiach Ona. But if they have a different chiyuv, then you need arvus, and a woman doesn't have arvus. That was the Rosh's assumption. We could, one day in the future, do a Shomeiach Ona shiur and try to understand why that is. But that he assumes. That's not on the table. You need arvus, assuming... Again, let's make it clear. And if, let's say, they're both in a barn because the woman did b'tavin, so she didn't say a word of kiddush, she just listened, and a chanami, because that's Shomeiach Ona. But you don't have Shomeiach Ona unless they're on the same level, either both the raisa or both the rabbana. The problem is, he'll come home, he's only the rabbana, and she hasn't daven, she's the raisa. So Rabbi Akiva Eger, not Alpi Shnayim, but Alpi Shlosha Edim, Rabbi Akiva Eger in three places, argues with the two places of the Note of Yehuda. In the Chuvis, Simon Zion, in his Hagos Shulchan Aruch there, and as some of you know, in the Mishnayos, Rabbi Kiveger also has what he calls the Tosfos Rabbi Kiveger. So he also has him in Masechta Megillah. He rejects this interpretation of the Rosh, and I am still to this day wrestling with who I think is a better read of the Rosh, and I don't think I'll resolve that anytime soon, and certainly not this moment. I aim to Sham Bifnim to see if you think who has a truer read of the Rosh. But Lamaisa, let's leave aside objective reading and just speak now Misvara. He argues on the Note of Yehuda's understanding of the Rosh. He's not even saying that other people argue on the Rosh. No, within the Rosh. But he says the Rosh never meant it. Says Note of Yehuda, you got it all wrong. You misunderstood the Rosh. He says the Rosh was only talking about a case in which a woman was Bechla, or anybody is Bechlal not Chayiv. Someone who's not chayiv at all, back to Joey's term, who's not a bar chayuv at all, so somebody like that, then would ein chanami not be ba'arvus. However, if you have a case where someone is b'chlal chayiv, even if it's on a different level, then arvus is still, sorry, Shomeiach Ona might not be. But arvus is still relevant. A mitzvah which is relevant to men and women, The fact is, I already davened, so now my chiyuv is knocked down to a daraisa, the rabbanon. But we're both chayiv mikra din on the same level. We're both chayiv midaraisa in kiddush. Just that this one davened already. And if the man was sick and didn't daven and the woman did daven, it's nothing to do with men and women. It says that rush got the whole thing wrong. It's not a din in women in arvus. But all the rush meant, he said, he made a mountain out of a molehill. He never meant it, never said it. All he meant was, you can't have arvus unless you're on the same level. Unless you're both mechuyev on the same level. If someone was already not knocked down a level, i.e., I didn't eat as much. In that case, he's only chayiv benching darabanan and you're chayiv because you ate more daraisa. But fundamentally, is this person shaykh to benching? Of course they're shaykh to benching on the same level as the other person. So too, he said, it would be true in theory with men and women. I think with men and women. It's all the Gemara was referring to a case, he said, where a woman would have been totally mufka. He says, what if her chiyah was only mirabanan and she didn't even eat kidei svi or something? He gives a hechatim like that. Again, that's the part which really meant in the rush. So that's why I'm still struggling, even though the whole world is somach on the Rebbe Yeager. I'm struggling with a little bit whether it's the best read of the rush. I admit that. But be that as it may, that... Well,
she would not be able to do that.
Well, first of all, as you said, the Gemara has a whole discussion. The Gemara has a whole discussion. Gemara has a whole discussion. We'll have to save that for another time. I'm running out of time, Amish. Even on the topic, I can't get into Mila. It's a huge discussion about Mila, right? But just remember, in the Chumash, we have women doing Mila.
Yes, of course.
Okay? So you realize it's not so simple. You realize it's not so simple. Lamaisa, the Mishnah Berurah passes like this, Rabbi Kivager. Rabbi Avadi Yosef has a sefer called Levi Afchein on Hilchos Shabbos. He collects Kedarko. Everything that's ever been said seems to also show that the Haskama Saposkim is like Srib Kivager. Lamaisa, you have that very famous machlokas. So I want to just say quickly two things before we end. Number one, halacha lamaisa. Then we'll get back to the old Chakira. Halacha lamaisa, Joey, practically speaking, we said there's one solution is what if Shaldavin? Right? One solution, of course, is to just say, well, I want to be Samech. Rabbi Kivager, no, I don't live in Prague. I don't have to hold like the Rabbi Yehuda. You know, we get the rest of the world, we could hold like the Rabbi Kivager. Okay. But let's say I want to be Machmer like the Rabbi Yehuda. It isn't the Rabbi Yehuda. So one answer is for the wife to daven, shine. But there's at least two or three other answers that you can be samach on when it comes to Kiddush. There is a discussion, I'm not going to have time to get into it, but there is a discussion about Havdalah also. There is a discussion of Havdalah. What is that? Tachanatano? Tachanatano? Yuch. I'm not going to have time to get into it, but there might be a different... Havdalah is its own question. Havdalah, but I don't have time to get into it. But even for Kiddush alone, you have a few other outs. Number one, the Bir Halacha says that even in tefillah, we all say Mekadosh HaShabbos, but unless you have kavana, you're not just fulfilling mitzvah tefillah, you have kavana, I'm fulfilling kiddush, you don't have that intent, then you're not yotzei. So the average person doesn't have intent, and if you're worthy, your wife's not going to daven, so but kavana, don't. Have intent not to have intent to be yotzei. That's one thing, the Bir Halacha suggests that. And furthermore, there is a Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer in the Tshuvas says two things which would almost, they go opposite directions, but either way they're fine. First thing is, he says kind of a thing like a lev masna. He assumes that now that we have this thing called Kiddush Makom Suda, that implicitly everyone has a kavana not to be out saying Kiddush. So you don't have to worry about it. But on the other extreme, he says, I mentioned this to Shul, if you have a really good memory, you'd even remember this. The Chasam Sofer has an incredible Kiddush, that for Kiddush da'araisa, you know when you're Yotzei? At the end of the evening, we say, Good Shabbos, Good Shabbos, Good Shabbos. Just saying Good Shabbos is enough to be Yotzei Kiddush Daraisa. Just mentioning it, right, Zacharehu B'dvarim, means saying anything that acknowledges that it's no longer Friday, it's now day 7, it's Yom HaShviyah, it's Shabbos. So instead of saying good morning and good afternoon, the way I say on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I say Good Shabbos, I only say that on Shabbos. So with my words, I've already been Zacharehu, I've already acknowledged Shabbos. You have to fulfill a mitzvah. A key of opportunity. Now, the problem with this is, not only is it just sound funny, the further real serious problem is that it seems midaraisa that Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim is part of Kiddush. So how do you get out of that? There was not such a Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim in your Shabbos. Okay, these are discussions. These are big discussions. But Lamaiz L'chafam Sofer says it. So when your wife comes home, you have to be mocked with it. She should say, Good Shabbos, honey, sweetie, Abba, Tati, what?
She said it first.
It doesn't matter if she says it first. As long as she says it, then...
Huh?
Okay. No, so once she says it to you, then that's her chiyuv d'oraisa, and then you're both the rabbanon. How does that work, you mean? So? That's not the mission. Kiddush. Does she not have to have kiddush because she said, because she likes candles? Right, of course, those two separate mitzvahs. Even according, it's not the Dvarim. You mean because she had la hadlik ner shel Shabbos? That's 18 minutes before Shabbos. Okay, she was much. Okay. Anyway, I just want to get back to the Perlau approach. So we mentioned this discussion of mitzvah chiyuvos and mitzvah pratis. So first of all, it could be that that's related to the note of Yehuda versus Rabbi Kiva Eger. Because if you see it, if you see the, if you see like Rabbi Kiva Eger, if you want to say that, that really fundamentally there's no problem in that case, then that's basically a way of saying, Rabbi Kiva said it's a mitzvah pratis. As long as each one of us are fundamentally chayiv in that mitzvah, so then we can be motzi each other. But if someone was fundamentally not chayiv in a mitzvah, said Rabbi Kveger, then I can't be motzi you. Why? Because arvus is a din in each mitzvah. It's a mitzvah pratis. I wasn't shaykh to the mitzvah. I can't be shaykh to the arvus of the mitzvah. However, according to the note of Yehuda, it's possible that he holds it's a mitzvah kolis. And therefore, theoretically, it has nothing to do with whether a woman is fundamentally chayiv in this particular mitzvah. That wouldn't have mattered. So if that wouldn't matter, so how come a man can't be motzi the woman, or a woman can't be motzi the man? Then it must be that it's not a prat in the mitzvah, because according to him it doesn't matter about that. It must be that it's a completely separate mitzvah, it's just that he has a chiddush, that they're mufka from that. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, it comes out that they're chayiv in kiddush, but they're mufka from the arvus that relates to kiddush. So that does not work together if arvus is a prat in kiddush. Which is very hard to say. If you want to have simultaneously they're chayiv and kiddush, but they're not shaykh to the arvus of kiddush, chayiv and benching, they're shaykh to the arvus of benching, it must be that arvus is not a prat in those mitzvahs, but rather a mitzvah kolos, which for whatever reason, which I didn't have time to get into, there's two or three excellent theories in the Achronim, but for whatever reason, the Rosh held that they weren't shaykh to. I just want to conclude, by the way, by mentioning that it could be that that's also relevant to the issue of Rav Sajigon, and whether he counts the mitzvahs we spoke about, arvus, as in the Torah. As with the meaning Tariag. And we mentioned that Rasajigon is weird because not only does he count it, but he counts it in the mitzvah Schov Salatzibor. What does that mean? Right? You ask, are we all chayiv? When I make kiddush for my wife or I for somebody else, I don't have to, what does that do with Zaksibor? So a theory that I saw mentioned is that maybe he holds there's two dinim of arvus. There's the arvus that each one of us have for each other on a private level, but then perhaps there's a second extra din of arvus which remains exclusively the province of the leaders. The leadership of the Shoftim, the Shochim, etc., they may have an extra and above and beyond Chiv of Arvus. Because again, if it's the regular Arvus, then it doesn't make sense that it's in the midst of Tzibur, because we're all Chayiv in that. But maybe they have a separate one. And in fact, I'll just conclude by mentioning it to Meiri, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Gimel, specifically refers to the Shoftim, the Shochim, the Talmid Chachamim, and the Manhigim, who have to constantly be looking into, inquiring the status of the people and doing the best they can to keep them up. Why? Because Kol Yisrael Reim Zabazah. So it can't be L'chorot Meiri denies Arvus on a private level. What he's saying is there's an additional Chiyuv, a higher level of Chiyuv, and that Meiri may go with Rav Sajigon. Good Shabbos. Well, why that